kosherquestion.com or nationalbugle.com and click on the link to Kosher, the Kosher Certified app. Download it. It's only $2.99. It is a good deal. You will be glad you did, and it's fun. Today I want to get to an issue that I think is timely. It was prompted by the whole Covington High School attempted smirkicide of the Native American elder, all part of the larger Smilocaust that has the entire media in an uproar. And it's one particular issue that's part of this, and this is regarding the status of white people in the United States vis-a-vis American Indians. So this is a little bit of a tricky issue for some people, and I've heard a variety of things. You hear some people, and I'm not going to go naming names, some people say, well, we want it fair and square, it was conquest, right? Well, you say that, you're opening up yourself up to, well, we're being conquered by other people, so suck it up. You hear all sorts of things. I've heard people talk about Salutrians coming here before the Indians, and therefore the entire continent belongs to us. This also is not really a good argument. I want to get into these issues today, at least at the start of the show. So, first of all, regarding the conquest of the New World by Europeans, this was a process that really started in 1492 when Columbus sailed the ocean blue. Now, obviously, Leif Erikson had reached the Labrador coast, North America, but that really did not start any process going. He visited it. There might have been a settlement for a little while, but that was that. It was Columbus's voyage of 1492 that, for once and for all, linked the New World to the Old World. And it was something that was going to happen sooner or later. It's a matter of humans developing the technology and the means, and also the desire to sail off across oceans and see what might lie on the other side. It was something that was going to happen sooner or later. It depended on one civilization or another developing the necessary technology and the necessary curiosity, perhaps a necessary motivation. It wasn't necessarily going to be the Europeans, but it was the Europeans who had were the first to develop some of these important technologies of navigation and seafaring in the open seas. But it didn't have to be the Europeans. It could have been the Arabs. The Arabs were doing a lot of sailing around the Indian Ocean basin. It could have been the Chinese. The Chinese had been sailing all over the Southeast Asia and into the Indian Ocean. It could have been them, but it wasn't. It wound up being the Europeans. And for better or for worse, now there were people in the Americas as well who never developed much by means of sailing. You didn't have, you had an Aztec empire, Mayan empire, a Inca empire, but they were not seafaring. So, besides canoes and whatnot, there was not much in the way of navigation there. It could have been, they could have, but they didn't. So it wound up being Christopher Columbus. And once the New World and the Old World were linked, once they really knew about each other, because, Leif Erikson, he was he born in Iceland and then went to Greenland and passed Greenland? But it wasn't as if you were starting a real chain of commerce and communication between Denmark and Labrador by way of Leif Erikson. That didn't happen. So it was Christopher Columbus. And once it happened, you wound up exchanging things, exchanging all sorts of things, plants and animals and germs. And the exchange of germs wound up being devastating, certainly to the inhabitants of the New World, which is could be predicted. There have been those who have said, well, there might have been some diseases that came from the old world, from the New World to the old, and that could happen. But one thing you have to remember is that the inhabitants of the New World were much less genetically diverse than those of the old world, because the inhabitants of the New World came from the old world. They came and, in the process of coming, went through a severe population bottleneck. So you were having, well, how many people actually wound up being the ancestors of most of the what we would call, what are called, the indigenous peoples of North and South America? The bulk of them descend probably from maybe a thousand or a couple thousand people. Very narrow genetic bottleneck. And you lose, when you go through a bottleneck, you lose things. A lot of our resistance to disease is genetically inherited. And so it was either lost or it was never developed in the first place, resistance to all sorts of diseases. So they were bound to be the ones who were going to be at the losing end of the germ aspect of the meeting of old world versus new world, or old world with new world. And it would have been the same result as it was with the new world being met by Europeans, as it would have been with had it been Chinese or Arabs or anyone else who might have come across bringing old world germs with them. So there was that. An issue I want to get to, well, I guess the main issue here is, okay, conquest, fair and square. Well, what we have to remember is that throughout human history until the 20th century, it was a territorial acquisition by military conquest was the rule. This is the way the world worked. It was when the world was virtually, or for all intents and purposes, militarily conquered by Europeans in the early 20th century. And if you look at a map, and it's good looking at these maps from, say, 1913 or 1939 or whatever. You look at these maps and you see the way the world is colored in, though France might be colored in purple and England in pink and Spain in yellow. Well, Spain didn't have such big colonies at that point, but you look at the, Portugal in green, and you look at the, all of Africa being, with the exception of Ethiopia and Liberia, all of Africa being carved up. South America had been carved up, but was independent countries, but they were independent countries run by European elites. Asia, India, most of Asia was under European control, with just China, and even China was under various European spheres of influence. You had Japan that was not under European control. And then you had a few buffer states like Siam, Thailand, or Afghanistan, which weren't under European control, basically because they were buffers between, in the case of Siam or Thailand, it was a buffer between French colonies and British colonies. And they were, the French and the British were content to leave Siam independent so that the other would not acquire it. And, Afghanistan between the Russian Empire and the British Empire down in India. The world was under effective European domination. And so, what did the Europeans do when they had conquered the world? They ushered in new norms. I mean, were they ever hypocritical about norms? People are hypocritical about their norms and about their principles. But the fact is, the Europeans, at the height of their power, started introducing all these concepts of sovereignty and self-rule and national determination and the inadmissibility of territorial acquisition through military conquest. And they started and even tried to outlaw war. They in the 19th century had outlawed slavery, another institution that has roots all throughout history and into prehistory. So there was a new morality. Our modern morality is only dates back, 80, 100 years, 120 years, but it has very recent origins, the new morality that we have, and its origins are of European origin. So Europeans instituted a new morality. And you look around, and even Japan, which was relatively free of European domination, but of course it was beat in World War II, for instance, and it has a constitution, and currently has a system with much more freedom of speech than really any European country or the United States. But even that was due to the principles that had been introduced by way of, say, American State Department ideologues who had a big hand in writing its current constitution. And I'm not saying this to as a means of saying, oh, Europeans are better than anyone else, but these were European ideals and European norms, and the new international morality has its European origins. So you can look back and using new morality, the new morality of the 20th and now 21st centuries. And if you were to judge the actions of Christopher Columbus or Cortez or George Washington or other people from history, from previous centuries, by the new morality, you say, oh, he's a conquistador, he's a slave owner, he's an Indian killer. You can say that, and it's hard to you we can't deny that they weren't conquistadors. But under the prevailing morality and the morality that had been the morality for all of human history up until then, this was exactly how the world worked. There was people moved around, and they conquered each other. And when they conquered each other, one side did poorly, the other side did well. And it was not a uniquely European thing. In more or less times that, look at 1492. What else was going on in 1492? You had much of Asia and Eastern Europe, if you're talking about Russia as being Eastern Europe, obviously, was under the Mongol yoke. The Genghis Khan had a few centuries earlier conquered Russia and China and India and Persia, and massive conquest, right? Genghis Khan, and left behind various ruling classes in these societies. You had more or less at the same time, you had this massive Arab expansion out of the Arabian Peninsula, following, this is some centuries earlier, but it's in historical times, following Muhammad and the rise of Islam, and Arabs conquered all of North Africa and much of the Middle East, and they're still there today. You had at starting, maybe around the the time of Christ or even earlier, the beginning of this Bantu expansion, Bantu-speaking peoples of Cameroon, expanding east and south and pushing out the entire races, the pygmy race, which is all but extinct now, the Bushman race, all but extinct now. And this wasn't at the hands of Europeans. This was at the hands of Bantu-speaking Africans. Very racially different. The Turks, Turkic people from Central Asia, taking over, you know, in the wake of Genghis Khan, taking over much of Central Asia and Anatolia. So you had, and that's all in historic times. In historic times, you had more or less contemporaneous with the European expansion. So much of the world is descended from Bantus or Turks or Arabs. And of course, nobody is asking them to return, to revert to their, say, you know, pre-12th century or pre-6th century abodes, because that would be ridiculous. And so the European expansion into North America and Australia, and, you know, they also, Europeans also expanded into South America, producing hybrid. There was nothing at all unique about this in history. And then, of course, if you look at prehistory, you know, you can see that the Indians, that the continent of the subcontinent of India had been conquered by a portion of the Indo-European people who moved south and conquered. And genetic analysis show that the modern Indians, especially on their paternal ancestry line, are descended primarily from these Indo-Europeans, but on the maternal ancestry line, the mother line, are descended primarily from non-Indo-Europeans, the people who would have been there and who would have been conquered. This is very common. You see this pattern over and over, and you see the pattern in Europe, that those same Indo-European people who had conquered India had conquered Europe. And you see in much of Europe, the especially along the paternal line, you see Indo-European ancestry. It's these Indo-Europeans who had the wheel, who had wagons, who had horses. They had marched south into India, they marched west into Europe and conquered the people who were there previously. This is the way history has always worked. And now, is that to say that, looking back, you should say, you can say that, yeah, the Indian people, they were conquered, and was it a good thing for them? No, it wasn't a good thing for them. It obviously wasn't, but this is the way the world had always worked. Now we have set up a new morality in the 20th century that prohibits slavery, that supposed to prohibit military conquest. Of course, you have, even after these principles have been encoded into law, you see Israel militarily conquering and annexing areas around it. So, the law is certainly not applied hard and fast across the board. We're going to continue talking about this on the other side of the break. So I'll be right back.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you some from Amazon.com. It really does work like the review says it does. I cannot believe that after the first few days, I didn't feel as sluggish or clogged up. It has had a profound impact on my physical, emotional well-being. I'm skeptical as most people about products and their claims, and I never write reviews, but this is a wonderful product and I recommend it to everyone. Great product. It has brought my blood pressure from the mid-150s over the 80s to the mid-130s over mid-80s. Along with diet and exercise in just the past couple of months. Excellent. Thank you, David. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing, knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
To the show. Here I want to address the Solutrean hypothesis. There is among some people this an idea that, well, actually, before these red Indians came over from Asia, there were white Indians here, and they were genocided by the red Indians. And so because white Indians were here, that's what justifies North America, what justifies white Americans in North America, our existence here. It's justified because there were white Indians here before there were red Indians. Okay, there's a lot of big problems with this. First of all, it accepts the idea that somehow many centuries past or many thousands of years past, real estate deeds were handed out to particular groups of people, real estate deeds that last forever. This is the whole idea of, this is a Jewish idea, right? That God gave them the promised land and it's theirs forever. And of course, maybe it's because So many white Americans are Christian and are influenced by that idea. I don't know. You know, it's very similar to the whole Khazar idea, the insistence that, well, the Jews of today are actually Khazars, and therefore they don't have these rights because they're not descended from the Jews of the Bible, which, you know, is a feasible position, a plausible position to have 100 years ago, 50 years ago, but really, there's archaeological and linguistic evidence that was not in the favor of that idea already, but now with the genetic evidence, the Khazar theory's just got to be rejected. But it wasn't necessary, because certainly under international law, any deeds handed out by God, any real estate deeds handed out by somebody's God, don't apply, right? They're irrelevant in international law. And so the same way with the Seleucidian idea that somehow people from Europe, let's just say the Red Indians, the American Indians, it's a little bit hard to determine exactly when their ancestors might have come, but let's just say it's 12,000 years ago, 14,000 years ago, or something like that. You're talking about the tail end of the last ice age. So the idea with the Seleucidians is, well, even before they came here, 20,000 years ago, maybe, going across the northern ice sheets in the North Atlantic, people came from Europe. Okay, so that would be like at least 15,000, maybe 20,000 years ago. Those Seleucidians obviously aren't our direct ancestors. They would have split apart from any of our direct ancestors. If you're a white European listening out there, they would have split away from us at least 15,000 years ago. So they're not our grandfathers. They're great, 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 how many other ever greats you want, uncles or cousins of very, very, very much removed, like a thousandth cousin, 500 times removed. It's not really a relation that you could claim inheritance from. Just think about it. You can't claim inheritance from that kind of relation. And of course, the people of Europe, what's becoming clear is the people of Europe 15,000 years ago, we are descended in part from them, but we are mostly descended from later comers to Europe, such as these Indo-European conquerors, whom we get all our languages from, and whom the languages of India and the languages of Iran descend from these same languages, these language groups. And these people went about their conquering only, 3,000 or so years ago. So even if you were to accept that Seleucidians had crossed over to the New World in the last ice age, our ancestry to them would be very, very tenuous. The genetic evidence is now showing that the vast bulk of the so-called indigenous inhabitants of the New World, the vast bulk of them came from a single population group that had come from Asia. Now that population group was partly descended from an ancestor of the Indo-Europeans. So there is actually a genetic link between Europeans and American Indians, but it's not doesn't seem to be by way of North Atlantic. It seems to be by way of this group from northern Siberia or from around the Lake Baikal region that doesn't live there anymore, that split up, and some of them went west and became ancestors of Indo-Europeans, and some of them mixed in with other Asians and went across the land bridge. That's how it seems. The Seleucidian idea, just get over it. There's no evidence for it, and even if there was evidence for it, we're so distantly related that we can't claim any kind of inheritance. I'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AirOutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Many people tell us about their experience with Extendivite. Just listen to what Glenn has to say.
Prior to taking it, I had diabetic neuropathy. The Extendivite reduced that significantly. Acid reflux was reduced. I had athlete's foot, very severe. Trimmed that down to about 75%. Dandruff, almost completely gone. I had occipital neuralgia at the base of my skull. I was having migraines, reduced by about 90%. Heart palpitations, my heart would kind of stall out. I would skip a beat. Very uncomfortable. And when walking from downstairs going to sleep, by the time I got to the bedroom, which is just one flight of stairs, my heart was pounding, coming out of my chest. My vision was blurry. This completely solved that problem. Great product. Thanks.
Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets, even with a growing audience every day. RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
This show, this is our special National Bugle Radio. We're trying to get white people over their white guilt regarding American Indians. There is no reason for white guilt. But there are good narratives and there are bad narratives. To just flat out say, we conquered the land fair and square. We won it in war. By itself, that's not good. There was a different morality in centuries past, and it was a morality of might makes right, and it was practiced by everyone. It was practiced by Aztecs. It was practiced by Mongols and Bantus and Arabs and Turks and Europeans. Once the Europeans pretty much won all the marbles, they said, wait a minute, let's rethink this. And not only did they establish new rules, but they withdrew from the areas where they were not the majority population. They withdrew from Asia. They withdrew from Africa with the tiny lingering. Well, actually, they did. They gave up power in everywhere in Africa. They've given up power. Gave up power everywhere in Asia. And in areas where they were the majority, they you would think they maintained power, but they haven't. In fact, now they're losing power everywhere they are to this Jewish minority. They're kind of the crypto minority. They pretend that they're white, and they're working against the interests of the actual white majorities there. But let's get back to the whole issue of the American Indians. Now, this land in the North America, it's good land. It's not the only good land in the world. There's good land all over the world. You know, there's good land in China. There's good land in Mozambique. There's good land in Iran. There's good land in Argentina. There's good land all over the place. It's not the land that is so special that's bringing people here. So when we talk about America, it's not just the land. People aren't coming here because they like gray squirrels and oak trees. That's not why they're coming. The country is much more than land. Why are people coming? Well, they're coming for the buildings. There are a lot of good buildings here. Think of the housing stock. Think of how much of the total assets in the United States are made up by buildings, housing stock or housing. We have a supply that has been built up over decades and centuries. And this was primarily, until very recently, these were all built and financed and created by the white people, the white people who are here. The institutions, people come here for institutions. People come here, you know, for the education, for the healthcare systems. These were not things that that white people took away from Indians. White people did not take the housing stock away from Indians. Indians, it wasn't an economic infrastructure here. There weren't highways. There weren't airports. There weren't roads and bridges and railroads. And these are all things that were built with labor. And that's why people come here. People come here not because of the gray squirrels and oak trees. They come here because of the infrastructure that was created, and it was created by us. So when we say white people built this country, they did. If the country looked today the way it looked in 1492, you wouldn't have Guatemalans and Somalis banging at our doors to get in. They're coming because of the wealth that was created here, not because of natural resources, not because there might be iron ore in the Great Lakes regions or coal buried beneath the Appalachian Mountains. That's not why people are coming here today. So we have to be honest about that. Now, what about these empires that existed before Columbus sailed the ocean blue? The Aztec, the Mayan, the Inca, some other lesser known empires. What did they consist of? Well, you know, often in modern history books, they're made out to be just as advanced as those of Europe that conquered them. That the Aztecs were just as technologically advanced in their civilization as the Spaniards. And, you know, that might feel good to say, but certainly if you're talking about technology, it's not in the least bit true. The Spaniards had the technology to sail across the ocean, something like the Santa Maria, the Nina, and the Pinta. These ships were technological marvels of their time, and they were extremely expensive to build. Certainly the Aztecs and the Incas had nothing approaching them. What about other things? How about metallurgy? Well, the Aztecs had metallurgy. They were working with gold, silver, and copper. They didn't have bronze. Maybe that's because they didn't have tin accessible, and they certainly weren't smelting iron. So their metallurgy was there. They had metallurgy, but it wasn't as advanced. Spaniards had also, you know, they had bronze, they had iron, they had steel, they were more advanced that way. It's been pointed out, you know, the Incas, they had an empire, and they had a bureaucracy, and you can go to Machu Picchu, and you can see the houses, the remnants of the buildings. They were stone, there were no arches, it was all stone beams, no arches. Of course, the Greeks didn't have arches. There were no arches under their bridges. There were no wheels over their bridges. They didn't have wheels. They didn't have writing. They had an accounting system. It wasn't writing, but they did have accounting. So they had things to count. And there was writing that hasn't really been deciphered in the Mayans. And there was some writing in the Aztecs, but it wasn't at all widespread. It wasn't nearly as widespread as what the Spaniards had. So the idea that they were just as technologically or civilizationally advanced as the Spaniards, it isn't true. That doesn't make the Spaniards better people. But that's why it was the Spaniards who crossed the ocean and conquered the New World, and not the Aztecs crossing the ocean and conquering the Iberian Peninsula. And it wasn't because Aztecs had no desire to conquer others. They certainly did. That's how they were an empire, because they conquered their neighbors. They conquered and enslaved. And what about slavery? We're going on to a different issue now, but remember, the Covington kids were assaulted or accosted first by blacks. It was blacks. What about this whole slavery thing? Should we feel guilt forever over slavery? This is pretty easy, because obviously there's been slavery all over the world, and so much of it's been documented. It was all over the world, and it wasn't always whites against blacks. You had Moors who were kidnapping, I guess, Irish and, you know, other Europeans, bringing them down, and there was a slave trade in North Africa. You had Slavs who were... The word Slav, of course, is has a similar origin, same origin as the word slave. And the Slavs were traded by the Vikings to Turks and whatnot, and to Arabs. You've had massive slave trades all over the place. Now, as far as the continent of Africa goes, you had African empires. But what were the African empires based on? Well, there's a certain amount of resources, things like ivory, but for the most part, they were based on slavery. Slaves are easy to transport because slaves can walk. So it's easier to transport slaves than it is bauxite or, certain things like gold can be traded because they're very valuable. And so even a relatively small amount is worth trading. You know, ivory, luxury goods. But these empires of Africa were built on slavery, and not only slavery as a commodity to trade with outsiders, but, you know, within Africa, I mean, there was just massive slavery. It wasn't, Thomas Jefferson or George Washington or Robert E. Lee going over to Africa and capturing blacks in the jungle and bringing them back. There was a slave trade. It was, for the most part, the slaves who would have come here would have been captured by other Africans and then sold to transatlantic traders, who were to a very large extent Sephardic Jews, and then brought over and sold in markets here. On the other side of the continent, the Indian Ocean side, there were slave raids led by Arabs who would go into the interior. It was still mostly Africans enslaving each other and selling to Arabs, but you did have Arabs who were going into Africa, going inland into Africa. And of course, the Arab slave trade, the Arab-run slave trade of Africans in the Indian Ocean Basin involved, A, far more Africans, and B, the Africans were typically sterilized, castrated, or the females, what happened to the children? Well, some of them would have grown up and passed on their genes, but for the most part, they weren't. The females were used as sex slaves, and what happened to the babies? Well, they certainly didn't grow up and reproduce. In the New World, the slaves coming over were far more likely to reproduce, and really nowhere more successfully than in the United States, where the slave population, the increase in the slave population outstripped the increase in the population of the whites in the areas that had a lot of slavery. So they from the point of view of demographics, the black slave population in the United States was very, very successful. Well, of course, they were still slaves. And it's not as if we want to say slavery, you know, was good for people. But demographically, if you're looking at the point of view of the group and their the propagation of their genes, if you're taking an evolutionary view of things, slavery certainly helped the Africans spread their genes and spread it to a new continent. And 400,000 or so Africans who made the transatlantic voyage have left behind, and I say, when I say transatlantic, I mean to the United States, have left behind some 40 million descendants. And that is that's wildly successful. What about their actual lives? And you can see, you know, you see the shacks that they lived in the 1800s, because there are photographs from the 1800s, and you can see the little shacks or cabins they lived in. And frankly, these cabins compare very nicely to what lots of Africans are living in today in the 21st century. And when you read accounts by Europeans or translated accounts from Arabs, accounts of what life was like in Africa in the 1800s, it was nasty, brutish, and short. Am I saying that somebody would have been lucky to be an American slave as opposed to a non-slave in Africa? Well, I'm not capable of making that judgment. Am I saying that somebody is lucky to be the descendant of American slaves as opposed to the descendant of free people living in Africa? Just look at the living situation of the descendants of non-slaves in Africa. It's not very nice. And you look at the living situation of the descendants of slaves in the United States in particular, and you know, they have very good living circumstances compared to blacks in Africa, but compared to most people around the world. They have very good living situations, and their living situations are heavily subsidized by white people. They have nothing to complain about. But they will complain. And part of the reason they'll complain is because the narrative that they hear is not what I just laid out, which I think is very, I can find lots of support for what I'm saying in the historical record. But no, what they hear about is Martin Luther King and slavery and Jim Crow and Dred Scott and all of this. And it's part of a Jewish narrative of victimization and incitement to hatred against whites. Now, you know, if you look at slavery, what impact did it have on the United States? It's had a very, very negative impact on the United States. It certainly had a negative impact on white people. It certainly had a negative impact on northern whites. And, you know, this is one of the things that sometimes I hear from, say, southern nationalists. Some Southern nationalists, and I don't name names, but some Southern nationalists seem to have a chip on their shoulder against Northern whites for being liberal and for, you know, insisting on the legal protections enshrined in the Constitution to be extended to the blacks of this country. Well, I mean, the fact of the matter is that if it hadn't been for these Southern elites, the plantation owners, and their demand for black slave labor as opposed to free labor, if it hadn't been for their desire for slave labor from Africa, then Detroit and Chicago and Boston and Philadelphia and other northern cities wouldn't be uninhabitable by the white people who built those cities. This is because of the this is a legacy of the desire by the Southern white plantation elites for black slave labor. So really, if you want to look at historical grievances, if you want to look at it that way, that's another way to look at it. Okay, we're up on the break. I'll be right back.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Did you know that neither the American Medical Association nor the American Bar Association were established to benefit the American people? Have you recognized that in our country, health care has little to do with health, and that our court system has nothing to do with justice? The priests of both medicine and law have been incentivized to implement a dark agenda on behalf of the Bilderbergers and their ilk. To protect ourselves and our progeny, we need to take a much closer look at how these two giant industries really work. Join me, Al Whitney, on In Defense of Humanity, Saturdays at 7 p.m. Central, as we expose the matrix and learn how not to consent to our own destruction.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from...
Okay, welcome back to the show. This is just where I want to wrap things up. The point of the show was we shouldn't feel guilt over the American Indians or over black slaves. People today, we shouldn't feel guilty about this. Regarding American Indians, the morality of the world throughout prehistory and history up until the 20th century was one of might makes right and conquest. And the Aztecs participated, the Incas did, the Mongols, the Turks, the Bantus, the Arabs, and the Europeans. Now, when the Europeans wound up winning all the marbles and effectively conquering almost the entire world, in the early 20th century, they ushered in, it wasn't forced on them, they ushered in a new morality that eschewed territorial conquest, that outlawed slavery, and that even attempted to outlaw war. And they voluntarily, for the most part, there was pressure in some areas, but for the most part, voluntarily withdrew from the areas where they were not the majority population. And now we've got this situation where Europeans are expected to surrender all of the land, including all of the land where they're currently the majority, including areas where you never had other peoples, people who weren't our ancestors, where they never existed before. So not only North America and Australia, but also Europe, were expected to surrender them without a fight. Not only without a fight, but with our active collaboration. And there are many collaborationists. And it is a Jewish-led project. We know it's a Jewish-led project. We shouldn't feel guilt. If anything, we were the people who ushered in a new morality. So we have nothing to feel guilty about. There was nothing unique about European conquest, other than we eventually, by the 20th century, won all the marbles and then gave them back. Regarding slavery, we have nothing to feel guilty about. Slavery was an institution throughout history and prehistory. Europeans banned it. The slaves in North America, in the United States, evolutionarily did extremely well, and their descendants do better than the descendants of much, much better than most people around the world, and certainly much, much better than the Africans who were not enslaved by Europeans. So there's no way that you can say that over the history of the United States that the blacks should have a historical grievance against the whites, because the blacks alive today are doing extremely well, and it is based on having their ancestors come here, even as slaves, but come to this country and not be left in Africa, because Africans aren't doing well, and areas where, like Haiti, where they were brought out of Africa and then wound up taking over as a majority population, aren't doing well. I hope this helped. I will be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.